C1P. Number 12B.
There's another point in here which one sees is of enormous importance. And she brings that out very clearly. Namely, how are you going to free yourself of being a mortal? What are you doing? What method do you use in order to free yourself of these animal propensities, as she calls them, and to conquer them? And so she gives two ways how to do it. The one is the metaphysical way, the religious metaphysical way. The other is the scientific way. And she gives both, because she knows if she is talking to a student and therefore to a beginner, she has to present to the beginner something that he can understand, but that she also has to present something to the advanced student that the advanced student can use. So from a metaphysical standpoint, she gives the following method or advice. She says, how do you master these animal propensities? Her answer is through kindness, chastity, charity, honesty. Can you hear? Through Christian, good, moral qualities. These are the metaphysical means. Choke these errors in their early stages. Another metaphysical advice, not to cherish an army of conspirators against your health, not to cherish them, regretting sin, see the baptism of repentance, retreating from belief in material suffering, to flee from body to spirit, to flee from body to spirit, to resist evil, and then it will flee from you, and put up a mighty struggle. So you can see these are the indication of a metaphysical, religious, Christian way of dealing with these evils. They are not really science. It's not the scientific method. Because we know in science, we always go out from God and not from a problem. In metaphysics, we go out from a problem, a material problem, and then metaphysics says, I'm above matter, I'm metaphysica, I'm above the physical, and you rise above the physical. Whereas in science, you take the standpoint of the synonymous term of God, and look out from the synonymous terms. Therefore, she also gives these scientific means and says that we should appeal, therefore, to the divine source outside of yourself. So instead of appealing to the best within ourselves, like repentance and kindness and charity, these are all qualities where their sources are within ourselves. She says, go to a source that is outside of yourself, namely to understand the power of God. Now she gives the science. Work with the power of God, with spiritual perception aided by science, not by moral qualities. Approaching, therefore, that whole proposition in a scientific way, to rise, to avail ourselves in every direction of the supremacy of truth. Therefore, go out from truth to arrive at the fullness of God's idea. Work from the fullness of God's idea. Can you see? So, she says, through divine strength and understanding you can handle it. Christian science is a sovereign panacea. giving strength to the weakness. You see, science gives now strength to the weakness. Don't put up that mighty struggle to overcome weakness with some kind of strength that you feel within yourself. She says we should learn the lessons of Christian Science. Therefore, let the perfect model be present in your thought, and what is necessary, spiritualization of thought, which lets in light and brings what? The divine mind into your consciousness. So you can see, we always can use two methods. The first method is the metaphysical method, which practically every good student and earnest Christian can use, using the best that he has in himself. Science uses the best that is in God, and therefore goes out from the perfection of God and lets God work through its idea. And that naturally is the standpoint of science. And in this way, we can win our victory over mortal men. So that we find what? If we handle that from the point of view of science, here she brings in something very unique. She says, immortal man has no power to sin. She arrives at that point where we see man has no power to sin. Even if he would like to sin, he can't. Man in science cannot sin. He has not the power to sin. And therefore he does not fear to get sick or to die. Man cannot get sick. Man cannot die. He has nothing in himself that could produce that. And that's the point at which we should arrive, really, that we can see the impossibility for man ever to get sick or ever to die. And this is actually only possible when we work from the standpoint of science. If we remain on the level of metaphysics and try to work out things metaphysically, we never will arrive at that point. Never. Because metaphysics says you are a rotten person and you rise above that. So you go out from the premises that you are rotten. Science goes out from the premise that there is only one man, namely the idea of God, and that idea of God can never fall, and therefore that idea remains always what it is. That's the science of being. All right, then we come to the last stone of love, truth as love. The epitome reads like this: in proportion as mortals realize the science of man, material consciousness constituting mortal man is put off, and the real man is put on. And you can see it comes to a sort of climate, the real man is put on. The whole tone of truth had to do about true manhood, rising into true manhood. Again, she takes up that whole question of conscious and unconscious matter. She says, there is an unconscious mortal mind, or that mortal mind is unconscious. And because it is unconscious of itself, it calls itself matter or brain. Because it is ignorant of itself, it is also ignorant of the error it includes, and therefore it's also ignorant of the effects of error that it brings forth. So she wants to show here, look here, we must see that if we trace everything back to mortal mind, we also have to see that mortal mind is not conscious of itself. It's an unconscious state of mortal mind. So that what we experience as body and as disease and as suffering is actually only the unconscious substratum of mortal mind. Whereas conscious mortal mind is superior to its unconscious substratum, namely matter. But you can have another level of consciousness. So you see what she has been telling. She was first telling about the unconscious mortal mind, then the unconscious substratum of mortal mind. And now she says, but there is actually another consciousness, which is really the true one, namely God's consciousness. And that consciousness really should govern the animate error, like body, and the inanimate error, like matter, so that the real man must be seen to be spiritual and immortal, and that the children of men are nothing but the counterfeits. Summing up it, she says, realizing the science of man, realizing that man is not conscious and unconscious matter and belief with its disease and etc., but realizing the science of man, the mortal is put off. So the only way out to get rid of the mortal here, she shows, is through the signs of man. There is no other way. So that we can see that all religious efforts, all moral efforts, actually are never really reaching the tone of love, of full, real perfection. The mortal then is put off, and the new man, the real man, is put on, at how she ends the tone of truth as love. Perhaps we really quickly run through that rather long tone of truth again. What is the main point that we have been considering at the point of truth? We are in the third part. The third part says, I would like to know what is being which is unchangeable. What are the facts, the unchangeable facts? At the point of truth, we are asking, what are the unchangeable facts about man? Because truth is always that which shows that man is truth all consciousness. So what is the fact, the unchangeable fact about man? If we take these seven subtones from a positive point of view and afterwards perhaps from the negative point of view, we would see that the facts of man, the isness of man, is actually what? Namely, that man is a state of the divine mind and not the state of a belief in the mortal, the belief in sickness and death. So it's a state of the divine mind. So from the point of spirit, one would have to see that we are actually living in a universe of spirit and not in a universe of matter with its self active mechanism where matter operates by itself, but that we are living really in a spiritual universe with a spiritual rhythm going on. At the point of soul, we would have to see that we are living above any situation, namely in the supremacy that mind will show us, so that we have a sense that we are actually controlling the universe, controlling the body, from that supreme standpoint, which would mean at once, at the point of principle, that we have to instruct our minds with science and not with any other so-called isms and ologies and dogmas, so that the divine mind that must be instructed or has the instruction of science, and that we live therefore in a scientific universe. Then at the point of life, we have seen really that we live in the truth of being, and therefore always project on ours, on everybody, the truth of being, and therefore can only help and save any situation. At the point of truth, Therefore, she has shown that man is always idea and never a mortal, that he is not constituted of more of animal propensities, of moral, of mortal qualities and things like that, but that we really begin to see that man is at the point of reflecting all the ideas of God. And then at the point of love, we see, then we really find that we have never been a mortal, that we have laid down our mortal sense of things, the new man comes into view, and I begin to feel from everlasting to everlasting, I have always been the perfect man. I never have lost my perfection, so I never have to regain my perfection. That's the consciousness of beingness at the point of truth. Then we come to the last tone in the third part, namely to love. The epitome here reads, the fulfillment of being is the perfection of love. And that is untouched by imperfection. So you can really hear, here we get the climax of everything, namely that being is always at the point of absolute fulfillment, of absolute perfection, and that it has never been touched by imperfection. It has never lost its status of perfection, has never to regain its status of perfection. And Mrs. Eddy explains that rather in a few lines. Doesn't take her much paragraphs to explain it, because when you come to perfection, there is nothing much to explain. Perfection is perfection. Like the days of creation, she shows it through those two subtones, love as truth and love as love. In love as truth, we see that knowing truth in Christian Science is perfect life. So what is being? Being is to know the truth. And that knowing the truth will show us that being is perfect. So, Mrs. Eddy says here about life, life does not depend on matter, neither now nor after death. So life is absolutely independent of matter, and therefore death doesn't solve a problem at all. We will not reach perfection after death as the religious belief is, that after death we enter into heaven and into perfection. It says, death doesn't solve the problem at all. What solves the problem is really to see the signs of life. You see, we are in that third, in that great third part of life and soul. So it says, what really has to be seen is that signs of life, and that signs of life must be understood right now, not after death, right now. Or we are not ready for spiritual life afterwards. So I like that. I like to see that if we want to be ready for spiritual life afterwards, we jolly well have to get busy right now. That we can't leave it to afterwards and say, well, afterwards I have time. So truth, therefore, is our actual life. Can you see? What then constitutes our life now? And she says, you have to see the signs of life. You have to see what is truth about life. What is the true sense of life? So truth is our actual life. And that life is eternal and present. When we come to love, as a subtone of love, love as love, in perfect love there is no fear. That's her last point. She says, every trial of our faith in God is awful. No, she doesn't say that, huh? Is awful. does not every trial of our faith in God makes us stronger? So why should we always moan if we have a trial in our life? She says, this is good. It makes us stronger. As if she would say, accept it, be happy about it, rejoice in it, welcome it, because it always brings you forward. It makes us stronger. The more difficulties that there are to be overcome, the purer our love. You could put it the other way around and say, we only gain a purer love the more difficulties we have. Or you could say, I would like to have more love for the spiritual, therefore the more difficulties I have, the more chance I have to prove it and culture it. See, all through this here, she really wants to show that difficulties, trials, are actually love's ideas and not the manifestation of animal magnetism, that they are here to show us our perfection, to force us into perfection, to drive us into perfection, so that we are forced to pull up our socks and do something about right now, to gain the truth of being right now, and not always to put it off, so that there is no more fear in love. Perfect love casts out fear. And he that feareth is not made perfect. And that's how she ends that tone of love. Yes, that is the third part. Can you see? It's a beautiful part, that third part. If we go quickly over that third part, just in the big tones, we really can see what is Mrs. Eddy showing here. She always wants to show here, you know, the facts of being are that being is absolutely unchangeable, that nothing can change being, that the isness of being is always untouched by any claim of mortal mind. Whatever a claim is under consideration, being cannot be changed. And that naturally is a good point to take for a practitioner, that he knows that the perfection of being is always intact. So, why is therefore being unchanged? And I just run quickly in an abbreviated way through those seven, and you follow perhaps with me just by knowing the seven synonymous term. You can concentrate the whole thing and say, all right, now being is actually unchanged. Why? Because there is only the law of mind at work, and the law is always unchangeable. You can see at the point of spirit that being is always perfectly balanced, never out of balance. Being, you can never gain and lose, so to say, being. Being is always balanced. Why? Because there is no duality in spirit. When there is no duality, there is no to and fro. You are always in the same balanced state. Therefore, at the point of soul, we can see that being is always supreme. Why? Because of the rule of soul. The rule of soul says always, I'm always above any situation. I never delve into a difficulty. I'm always staying right above, and therefore I'm supreme. Being remains always untouched. It's always the master. Why? Because at the point of principle we see, because principle governs, nothing else governs. Neither the body governs, nor mesmerism governs, nor people govern. It's only principle that governs. Or you see at the point of life that being is always immortal. It's always unchanged. Why at the point of life? Because life says, I always sustain myself. I don't need anybody to sustain me. I don't need food or drugs or anything to maintain and sustain me. I sustain myself. That's why being is unchanged. Or at the point of truth, we see that being is always embodied in soul and never in animal propensities. It's always embodied in the senses of soul. Why? Because truth is only conscious of itself. And therefore, it can never be conscious of anything that is wrong. And then at the last point, she said that being is always fully identified in its perfection, because love says, I'm always perfect, I have never lost my perfection, I cannot regain my perfection, because I'm always at the very point of perfection. So you can establish from a positive point of view really the unchangeability of being or of the existence of every idea. If you go through that again and see why or what tries to touch really being, then you can go through it again and say, what are the arguments that try to bring being out of balance? So at the point of mind, you see, being can never be touched by mortal thought, by mortal opinions, by mortal conception, by human conceptions. So that whatever people think about anything, whatever the opinions of people are, it can never touch being. From the point of view of spirit, you see that matter, food, material circumstance, material influences can never touch being, because being is spirit. Or you see at the point of soul that you can see that the testimony of the physical senses can testify against, but that doesn't matter, because that does not touch the senses of life or of being. Being is soul and therefore testifies to itself only. Or you begin to see at the point of principle that being remains intact, because human theories, human dogmas, human isms and ologies, mesmerism, spiritualism, necromancy, occultism, astrology, etc., etc., can never really influence principle. So being remains intact because being is principle. Or you take the point of view of life and you see being always remains intact because it is the way of life, the method of life, the self-perpetuating way of life, and therefore wrong methods, material methods of healing, hygienic methods of healing, psychological and psychiatric methods of healing can never touch that case, because life says, I have my own way of life and I go that way of life and nothing can disturb that way of life. And so we too go that way of life. At the point of truth, we see being is always untouched. Even if there are those suggestions that there are mortal qualities in man, that man is just a build-up of animal propensities, that man is just a build-up of all the wrong qualities that you can think of revenge, hate, jealousy, envy, pride, self-condemnation, complexes, hereditary beliefs, and so on. In spite of all that, the mortal cannot touch our immortal status of being. Just think about that, that you are from everlasting to everlasting God's own idea. And nothing that constitutes the mortal can ever touch that. That no matter how many arguments and attacks we feel within ourselves, we still can say, I'm the Son of God, and nothing can change that. So at the point of love, finally, you can see no fear of the future, no danger can ever touch me. I'm always within the infinite protection of being, and that is perfection. So you establish the unchangeable existence of being.